The following podcast is brought to you by the new AT&T.
Mach has a breakthrough, Jack's ride goes boom, and Ben introduces us to the man from Tallahassee. Executive producers Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse join us for insights on all that and more in today's official Lost podcast, hosted by ABC.com. Welcome back to the podcast. As we just mentioned, executive producers Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse will again be joining us to take your fan questions and rehash last week's episode, The Man from Tallahassee. Of course, they'll also be looking forward to this week's episode, Exposé, which airs on Wednesday, March 28th from 10 to 11 p.m. on ABC and is available the next day at abc.com. First up, though, we're joined again by actors Jorge Garcia and Josh Holloway, who lately seem to be having all the fun on the island. Riding in cars with boys, playing ping pong on the beach, and coming up this week solving a mystery. So we sat down with these two intrepid adventurers to talk about ping pong and find out once and for all who is really the better player.
So, you're really the number one draft pick, Grimace?
Yep. Are we playing with the mercy rule?
Mercy rule?
Yeah, like if I'm up 11-0, then I, you know, automatically win.
You're gonna go up 11-0?
No, I mean, neither one of us.
Sure, we can have a mercy rule.
What's so funny about that is I am the biggest, personally, heckler in the world when it comes to playing ping pong or anything, and I'm a good ping pong player. No one has beat me yet, so to play that role, I was being myself, you know, being cocky, like, come on, what? You want a mercy rule? You know, it was hilarious. And then he kills me. So
Josh is a pretty good ping pong player, and he's also a good trash talker, too. It's not like we didn't even do an organized tournament, but the people who were on set that day, Josh actually might be able to beat. It was, I actually bought a table because I heard it was coming, and they said, Stephen Williams asked me if I played ping pong. I was like, I think I can play ping pong. I mean, I was like, well, I don't know how to be good at it, do I? And he's like, oh, yeah, you have to be the best at it. So I was like, okay, I'll get a table. But, yeah, there's ways to make yourself look really good on TV, too.
Sorry I beat you so bad, dude.
Sorry you hustled me, you mean.
My mom had a table in her basement. And I played a lot at the this place I hung out for a while. It got kind of good.
Well, hooray for you.
Doesn't look like that last slam caused any long-term damage to your forehead. And you got 3 points, which is better than zero.
Something you want.
Your character is lost in poker, and anytime he plays any of the other characters in games,
he loses.
He just loses.
Yeah, even though he believes fully that he's got him, you know. It's like, and it's with the gun thing, too. I mean, he's the slowest draw in the world. I mean, it's like every time I reach for my gun, I get hit. Why don't you just have it out, you know? It's, you'd think he'd learn, but he doesn't learn from his mistakes. He continues to make them. It's fun to watch Sawyer be his worst enemy. So it's funny, comedy, good stuff.
Of course, as we learned last week, the inspiration for the ping pong story came from the writer's own ping pong table. To find out exactly what they're drawing inspiration from this week, we once again turn it over to executive producers Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse.
Well, hello, Damon.
Hi.
Here we are, another podcast. Fantastic.
Oh, God. So exciting.
I can tell. You can barely contain your enthusiasm today.
I am. I always love doing the podcast, but we are in that zone now where we are in the midst of breaking the final three episodes of the show, episodes 21 and 22. Obviously, 22 will be a 2-hour season finale. So just a little sleepy, Carlton.
Yes, it's a lot of work in the next 8 weeks. It's hard to believe that within the next 8 weeks, all of season 3 will be finished and aired. It's not kind of, it's kind of astonishing. If you actually knew how much we had left to do, you would understand the kind of subtextual anxiety perhaps that is existing this morning.
Can you take a pill for subtextual anxiety?
You can take pretty much every pill that the American pharmaceutical industry makes for subtextual anxiety.
It just sounds
anxiety.
Like one of those things in the, do you have subtextual anxiety?
Yes. You do.
Yeah, exactly.
Angle fall.
Anger Fall is good.
Anger
Fall. Hey, speaking of falling, how about that episode last night?
Wow, it was awesome. I was watching it with my wife and daughter who had not seen it, and I was watching
I'm not talking about American Idol. I'm talking about Lost.
No, I was talking about Lost, too.
Carlton voted for Sanjaya, just so everyone knows.
I will not admit that.
you will not deny it.
I won't deny it either. And so I got to watch the reaction when Locke went out the window and their kind of big open mouth, gaping expressions, which was fun. It was like, oh, my God.
And thank God Terry only needed one take to do that fall.
I know.
He's a real pro.
And then my daughter turned to me and said, you can't survive falling 8 floors out of a building. And I said, well, if you're John Locke, you can.
Not just that, but we were having this debate about how many stories would make it ridiculous. You know, and how many stories could make it believable. And sort of in the midst of that argument, somebody brought in this article about this guy who, like, fell out of a plane or something.
Yeah, he fell out of, like, a hotel in, like, Toronto or something. They were horsing around and with some buddies, and he crashed out the window, and he fell, like, 15 floors. But there
and
was
survived.
An awning. He did survive. He fell a long way.
And that should remind you, kids, that's what happens when you're horsing around.
Don't horse around in hallways during fraternity parties or anything else. Weddings.
Or sorority
conventions.
Parties. Anything.
Okay. Now, that's kind of our safety announcement for today. Let's get on to talk a little bit more about the man from Tallahassee. And today I'm going to try to make the questions that Chris has prepared sound very conversationally.
As if you were not reading them.
Conversationally? Conversational.
A good idea would be to look at the question, get an impression of what the question is, and then look away at me and pose the question in your own words.
So I'm kind of curious, Damon. What's up with this box? I mean, is there literally a box on the island? I think, you know, that word box is really sticking in people's caws.
Well, I think that...
if people had a claw.
I think that Ben quite clearly says, let me put this into terms that you can understand, John, which in knowing that they have some sort of file on Locke and they refer to having knowledge of the fact that he worked in a box company, that maybe this is just some sort of metaphor that Ben is using to explain whatever this box construct is on the island. Because I think it would be sort of silly to walk to the middle of the island and there's like kind of a big, large refrigerator box sitting there and Kate's horse comes tromping out and Saeed's little cat and Jack's dad and, you know, I don't know, that would be kind of the worst idea in the history of ideas.
Yeah, besides, the best box idea was done in that show Prophet, where there was the naked guy sleeping in the box.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was Adrian Pasdar, now on television's hit show Heroes. So look at what happens if you sleep in a box long enough.
That's right. You end
I
up
keep
on
telling
Heroes.
You, Carlton. So, yeah, I would say if you continue to watch the show, and the next time when we revisit this story, what happens next to Locke and Ben and Mr. Cooper, who is bound and gagged, that we will have a much clearer understanding of whether or not Ben was being literal or figurative when he was talking about the box. But as all good things on Lost, you might have to wait a bit.
Yes, I think that, you know, this storyline is a exercise in delayed gratification. We feel like when we return to it, it's going to be very rewarding. But it's not next week. It's not the week after that, or even the week after that.
Yes.
Or even the week after that.
You'll be seeing Locke again. Within the next couple of weeks, but you will not. You
will not be returning
seeing,
to the story for
Cooper.
A while.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, did Locke really blow that submarine up?
Well, I would say it certainly appeared that he blew it up. You know,
exactly.
Unfortunately, it was at the expense of Jack. It was very interesting to hear him lecture Ben last night and basically say that, you know, Locke is sitting in judgment that Ben has sort of corrupted the spirit of the island by putting on J. Crew outfits and using electricity and. You know, all those things. Locke has always been sort of a very naturalistic dude. So do you think that's going to lead to the other sort of, you know, taking a more naturalistic approach to life? Do you think that any of Locke's words will have resonance on them, or are they going to continue to live in their little houses and make peanut butter sandwiches and listen to, you know, Petula Clark songs?
That sounds, you know, the way you pitch that question is kind of loaded, Damon. But I think it would be fair to say that the that Locke's attitude about the island and his attitude about Ben's sort of seeming disregard for the island will definitely come back into play, and that the others are not going to be completely and fully encamped in that place, maybe for the entire season.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah. I can't wait to see what happens next.
Yeah, that's going to be good. I mean, we.
Speaking of which, yeah. I'm really interested in Rousseau. Now, we saw last night she's checking Alex out from afar. Why doesn't she just come running out of the jungle and grab her and hug her and say, "I'm your mom, you know, let's go off into the jungle together and eat bugs."
That was so good, because the actual line Chris wrote was, "Talk about Rousseau watching Alex from afar."
See, but I threw in the whole eating bugs thing. I made it conversational.
And yet you got the word afar in there, which is not a word I've ever heard you use in your own conversation.
Is it a word?
Yes,
it's like I've admired you from afar. I mean, not you.
Just the 3 feet away on a couch.
This is about as close as I want to get.
Wow. That's nice of you.
So you don't want to answer the question?
I think that Rousseau, you know, any French woman who speaks with a Serbian accent and has been living in the woods for 16 years eating bugs, as you so aptly put it, you know, has got some issues, and those issues need to be overcome before she can actually go and embrace Alex as her...
And
that's her daughter.
And what would she even say? You know, "I'm your real mother." I mean, what would you do if some crazy...
Would you like a grasshopper?
Women with twigs sticking out of her hair came running up to you and said, "I'm your real mother." Would you
care? That happened yesterday.
Would you care for a cricket? That was your real mother, though. Strangely enough.
I know. But I love my mother. But
you've got to get her back.
She's got to get the twigs out of her hair.
She has a... She has some textual anxiety disorder, so, you know, that's what happens when she goes off her meds. Let's talk very briefly about Exposé, which is an episode that we're very excited about next week.
We love Exposé, although I'm sure there will be a lot of people that will jump on, you know, various websites like, you know, Television Without Pity and say that we've jumped the shark with this episode. But, you know, if we were ever going to jump the shark, this is the best way to have done it, I think.
Yes.
I mean, to take a time out after, you know, seeing Locke with Cooper on the island to go do an episode of which is Nikki and Paula's flashbacks. I mean, certain people are going to find that
annoying. The very idea of it is offensive. How dare we?
And yet, I think it will satisfy those people who are like, "Who the hell are Nikki and Paula? Why are they even on this show?"
You mean like Sawyer?
Yeah, exactly. Like Sawyer, exactly. And I actually think Rodrigo, who many of you have probably seen in the interim in the 300.
Just 300. There's no "the" in front of it, I don't think.
I think it is the 300.
No, it's 300.
Is it?
Can we have a ruling?
It's 300.
300.
Oh, okay. Ding, 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 ding. Sorry. 300.
Yes.
Apologies. That's Rodrigo.
It is.
And anyway... I think both he and Keeley did a great job in this episode, and we're really anxious to see what your guys' feedback is on this episode. So write in with your thoughts and questions and comments for next week.
What's really cool about it is you'll be seeing some old friends, too. You know, one of the things about Nikki and Paolo is we're going to be doing their flashbacks, but their flashbacks don't take place mostly on the island. In fact, only a couple of them take place in Australia before they came to the island, but... you'll be seeing, you know, some friends, some of our dearly departed friends.
You know what? And then that is actually the perfect segue into my first question.
Questions!
Time for the questions! Did you say that in a falsetto? Wow. Yeah.
What you hear is like amazing music. What we hear is Chris going, "Yay!"
Like Michael Jackson.
That's nice.
He's even got one glove on. It's very odd. Damon, what's up with Boone's new hairdo in Exposé posted by DeMarlton? We've posted once in the last 90 days, but a good post.
Is DeMarlton like Bennifer? That's our Bennifer name?
Yes, it is. Exactly.
Brangelina? Okay, I like that.
That's good. I've seen some screen grabs from the upcoming episode, Exposé, and I have to say I'm a bit confused. One shot shows Boone holding Nikki by the shoulders, and his hair is noticeably longer than it was back in season 1. I mean, I know there's some discrepancies, particularly with Sawyer's hair in the pilot changing to a longer style in the second episode. But Boone's hair is the one constant for all of season one. This is difficult to swallow for those of us who are disturbingly obsessed with the show. I think that's pretty much the operative phrase.
I'm not really sure there's an answer to that question, other than
it's not
we're
really
going to be
question.
One of the people
just
who
a
really hates expose.
Yeah.
I mean,
if you hate Boone's hair in its abnormal form, then you'll hate expose.
Yes, that constant has now become a variable, and there's nothing we can do about it.
We ourselves were not that happy with Ian's hair in the episode. Well, Ian himself was fantastic, but the hair...
We had to get a wig, because the reality is Ian Somerhalder is a working actor and is enormously gracious, considering he is a character that we have killed off the show every time we have ever asked him to come back and visit us again in a flashback. He has been, you know, on a plane on his way to Hawaii, always happy to rejoin the family. He's a classy guy and an enormously talented actor, but the one thing we're not going to ask him to do is to cut his hair for 2 days of work.
Just ask him to wear an otter pelt instead.
That's right. No, we're just going to stick this... squirrel carcass on your head. And so he's an enormously good sport, but the reality is sometimes the wigs on the show, the most egregious wig is still Jack's mullet in the season premiere of season two, when he is telling Sarah that she's never going to walk again. I just can't keep
that
my
was
eyes
like Will
off
Ferrell here.
It was bad news.
No, it was, you know, but look, the important thing is the acting underneath that hair is first rate. And I think you will really enjoy seeing Boone. And it was really fun for us to actually have Boone and Shannon reemerge in the stories. It's always fun to have them back on the show, and Maggie and Ian are awesome.
So I guess I get to ask a question now. My connection with Carlton by Birthday Buddy 322.
Wow.
What an interesting name. One post in the last 90 days. Hey, Carlton, imagine my surprise when I learned that you and I share a birthday. Oh my gosh, Carlton, is it your birthday today?
It is, Damon. Thank you.
Non-approved, clearable birthday song to you. Non-approved, clearable birthday song to you. Birthday, Carlton, birthday. Literally, I wanted to sing you happy birthday, but we were informed by the ABC lawyers that we would have to pay a fee.
So we have to make up our own birthday.
So I just wrote that song on the spot for you.
That is fantastic, and I really appreciate it.
Get to Birthday Buddy 322's actual question, who, by the way, mentions that you have supplanted William Shatner as their number one. I guess it's his birthday today as well.
It is. For my entire life, I've always lived with people on the radio saying, hey, it's William Shatner's birthday today.
I share a birthday with Barbara Streisand.
Well, see, that's better.
I missed Hitler's birthday by one day. That's what I was told.
That's fantastic. And and now that you're working on the new Star Trek movie, it's kind of an extra connection, William Shatner.
But I can say, hey,
you can go up to Bill Shatner and say, hey.
You guys share a birthday.
That's right.
And I share a birthday with Barbara Streisand.
And he'll go, what are you talking about? Who? What? Carlton?
By the way, this is not confirmation, nor is it denial, that William Shatner will be appearing in the new Star Trek film.
Thank you.
Anyway, Birthday Buddy 322 actually does have a question, and that is, now that we've seen a fair amount more of the other's M.O., it seems like Charlie being strung up in a tree in season one is fairly out of character for them. Is there a particular significance to why that happened?
I think that you may think it's out of character now, but by the time the finale rolls around, you will not think that it's out of character. Yeah. The others are a lot badder than maybe you might think that they are.
Good answer.
That's pretty much all I got to say on the subject.
Well, happy birthday, Carlton.
Well, thank you, Damon, again. So, Damon, what song did Jack play by Alpha Centauri 855, who's posted 17 times? Does anybody know the name of the song Jack was playing on the piano?
That was an original composition written by Michael Giacchino, our genius composer. And basically, we wrote this script, and we knew that Jack was going to be playing an original piece that Jack wrote, and we started getting MP3s from Michael playing this sort of beautiful, haunting piano melody, and then they sent it down, and Matthew Fox, who does not play piano, learned it so that he could play it on the piano, and... you get the finished result on your television set.
That's right.
That's a very straightforward answer to a very straightforward question.
We're not doing a lot of dodging today, are we? So I guess then I'll go back to you with another question.
Okay. Oh, I'm asking you one now. Speaking of dodging, Trigger Happy Producers by Schwingmeister 4, one post in the last 90 days. Hi, first of all, the usual, love the show, watch every week, et cetera, et cetera. I might point out that's not the usual. The usual is, hate the show. It's too confusing. What are you doing? When are you going to end it all? But thank you for the kind words. My question is this. Why in recent episodes, when you have introduced interesting characters such as Ms. Clue and Mikhail, Jacob or Patchy, and Mikhail and Patchy, I guess they're the same guy, do you decide to kill them off again a few episodes later? I was very much looking forward to mind games being played on the Losties by Mikhail, only for him to be fried by that sonar force field thingy. Is this because you don't have backstory for the characters, or are you worried about overloading the show too much? Thanks, and it would be great to hear a question from a British lover of Lost end up on the podcast. So, mission accomplished there.
Well, thank you, British lover of Lost.
Schwingmeister.
Schwingmeister.
Sounds like a classy guy.
Or girl.
Or girl.
That's true. The answer is, I don't think that you will be disappointed in a upcoming episode when one of those characters that you mentioned might actually show up again.
Really? So they're not dead?
Maybe not.
Fascinating characters.
That's true. Maybe not. And
it's very exciting.
We also love Patchy and Mikhail, who are one and the same. Excellent. We call him Patchy, but his name is Mikhail. Are you guys Volkswagen fans? Posted by
nice pronunciation.
H Gale, Volkswagen. Are we going to see the Volkswagen bus again anytime soon? I've noticed you've used two now, with Locke's bug and the bus we found in the jungle. I'm a big Volkswagen fan, and an even bigger Lost fan, and I just love the two merging. And I can't imagine finding a vehicle like that and then leaving it, you know? Thanks, Henry Gale.
Well, Henry, I think you'll be seeing the bus again, and I think we're just going to kind of leave it at that. But it would be interesting, you know, if the bus itself had a flashback of sorts, and we understood how it came to be resting in the jungle there.
I'm going to even make a bolder and audacious revelation right now, which is that you will see yet another Volkswagen product before the end of the season the island.
Unbelievable. I hope that...
We're in answer mode today, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
All right.
Wow. My final question for you, Carlton. Alcatraz Island in Season 1 by Chewy837. One post, the last 90 days. I just started listening to your podcast, and they have single-handedly saved me from confusion and disappointment during Season 3. Again, normally we hear the opposite. Even listening to your previous shows.
Does that person have anxiety, subtextual anxiety?
I don't think so.
Disorder?
Chewy837 has kind of got it together on this question. Even listening to your previous shows, you hint at things that are just now coming to light. On that note, watching Season 1 again, I noticed another clue that proves you do know what you are doing. When Saeed is examining Rousseau's map, he overlays a few pages talking about places on the island and whatever. But I noticed the final map shows a small island in the foreground, clearly separated from a larger island in the background. Is this really Alcatraz Island, and has this clue gone unnoticed since then?
Not by you, my friend.
Well done, Chewy837. Believe it or not, we have known since the very beginning that there was at least one smaller island off of the coast of our main island.
Yes, and you can go back and look at that for confirmation.
Yes, and Rousseau has known about it, but she, in the grand spirit of I leave them alone and they leave me alone as long as they take my baby away from me and I can continue eating twigs and bugs. I will stay on the main island and make traps.
That's right, Damon.
Alrighty, that's all the questions I've got.
Can I ask you one final question on my side?
Would you?
Posted Behind the Scenes by Artie Kuhn. This is actually kind of a good question.
Alrighty.
Great episode tonight. This isn't a question about the mythology of the show as much as it is about the process the writers have. I've been listening to the Battlestar Galactica podcast with Ron Moore, and he spends most of the time talking about how the story came to be, and it's really interesting. So I know that you said that Ben wasn't intended to last beyond a few episodes, but you guys decided to keep him around after seeing how great Michael Emerson was. That makes me wonder what the original plan was. Without Ben, none of tonight's episodic events would have happened. Would Jack, Kate, and Sawyer would never have been captured, et cetera, et cetera. What was the original plan? What is your process for fleshing out the details of the larger mythology? I know it involves ping pong, but can you go into greater detail?
First off, Ron Moore is a genius, and we're big fans of him and his show, although we don't have time to listen to his podcast. For sure, it's excellent. As I recall, and this is, I can only be as honest as my memory serves, our original plan for the character of Henry Gale was a three-episode arc. The first episode was when Saeed captures him in one of them. And then it would have, by the end of the third episode, after he sent Charlie and Anna Lucia running off to find the balloon, he was going to escape.
Correct. And go back to the other's camp.
And run off to the other's camp. And that was going to insulate us. If we wanted him to be the leader of the others, it would have kept in play everything that we wanted to do. It was always planned that Michael was going to come back and kill a couple of our people. And it was going to be a frame job on the others. But we kept him around. Emerson was so good that we extended the arc to coincide with Michael's arrival back, and we killed two birds with one stone, so that the escape happened at the same time that Anna Lucia and Libby were killed.
Right, and honestly, if Emerson had not been great, if we'd had an actor in that part who hadn't worked out, we could have still done the same stories. We would have had another character established among the others who would have fulfilled the same functions, captured our characters, and the storyline would have continued. There would always have been a leader of the others. But that was just a backdoor escape hatch. I mean, I think it was always our intention, and the reason we went to great lengths in selecting Michael Emerson. And, we really basically, Damon and I sat around over breakfast one morning thinking about, who are some actors who would really be good as this guy? And we had both seen him in The Practice playing this serial killer, for which he won an Emmy. And we had loved him so much. And we got him on the phone, and he was walking through the slush in New York and said, "Hey, you want to go down to Hawaii?" But it was always our intention that if he was as good as we had hoped that he would be in the part, that would be the cool reveal, that our guys had captured the leader of the others. They had him in their captivity right under their noses, was the guy who was their greatest nemesis and adversary, and then he would escape. The variable became, well, Emerson is so good and compelling that we were like, hey, we could write some other stuff.
Yeah, we can actually, because we were thinking no matter how good he is, we can't keep him locked in a room for essentially, five episodes.
And then we discovered we actually could. He was that good. And then
lockdown came along. Yeah. It was the perfect opportunity. Originally, the idea for that episode was we knew that they were going to do a lockdown because Michael when we designed the hatch, we had the blast doors built in, and Michael points it out several episodes before he even runs off. But the reality is we had always planned lockdown was going to be like a Lock Jack episode or a Lock Echo episode. But when we decided to keep Ben around, Henry at the time, we felt like that's who Locke has got to be trapped in there with. So, it was really, the story began to morph around our desire to write more for Emerson. But we had already come up with the line, I think that was about in his third episode, when he's being questioned after it's revealed that he's another and they get back, he talks about who the other's leader is and what a great man he is.
Right.
And we wrote it in a way of he could be referring to himself, or he could be referring to someone else. And I think that question is still very much in play.
Right.
Even a season later.
Was it kind of a mind game? Was he literally sort of dumping the sort of notion of Jacob on them?
Who the hell is Jacob, Carlton, while we're answering questions?
That's a question that is not going to get answered today.
Damn you.
That's pretty much it. We've run up against the wall of questions and of time, I think, Damon.
All right, Carlton. So, well, happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Oh, next week, special guests, Eddie Kitsis and Adam Horowitz, the writers of Exposé.
And many other quality Lost episodes, including the Hurley episode this year.
Dave last year. Eddie and Adam are fantastic writers and are really important and integral part of the creative process of the show.
Very funny.
We felt like it would be good for you guys to meet them out there.
But I think they'll probably be sitting in for me, so you guys will have a lovely time together. I'll be a little jealous, but maybe absence makes the heart grow fonder.
My
biggest fear is that all the response will be, what do you need Damon for?
No, yeah. That won't be the response. But honestly, but what happened, the subtextual issue here is that Eddie and Adam were very anxious about coming on the podcast with Damon not wearing his pants. And that was kind of the deal breaker. So we're at an impasse. It's either Eddie and Adam or Damon has to put his pants on.
Do you have to be so negative? Do you have to say I'm not wearing any pants? Can we just phrase it as I've chosen to wear no pants? Or You know, it's, this is a lifestyle decision, Carlton, and just because it's your birthday doesn't mean that you have any right to
You're right, and I apologize for that.
And you sit there in your sombrero, and you look down your nose at me, and you shake your maracas, and you tell me that you don't like the way I dress? Well, sir, I'm not thrilled about the way that you dress either.
You think those students for Tufts are really listening to this for credit still?
If they want to pass their class, they better. All right, guys.
That's it. Adios.
Adios, Damon. Muchacho.
Muchacho. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That about wraps up this podcast. Join us again next week for commentary and insight from two more of our writers, Eddie Kitsis and Adam Horowitz. They'll be rehashing Exposé and giving a preview of the following week's episode, Left Behind. Exposé airs Wednesday, March 28th from 10 to 11 p.m. on ABC and the next day at abc.com.
This is for Mac McKinney. Mac, your chance has passed to play professional ball, but you can live vicariously through Vince Young's rookie year. You've obviously seen how he plays. Now see how he lives with AT&T Home Turf. Just go online to attblueroom.com/sports for exclusive access into your favorite athletes' worlds. See inside Vince's home and check out the AT&T technology that keeps him connected. So that's Mac's world. For everyone who's not Mac, if we can deliver his favorite quarterback to him, we've got what it takes to deliver your favorite athletes to you. The new AT&T. Your world delivered.